Hi there, and welcome to Taking Care in Business, a podcast that I created out of my passion for using business as a force for good. It all started for me in 2016 when my company, Bolson Group, was the first in Indiana to become a B Corp certified company. I've been on a mission ever since, learning from others all the different ways that we can be more impactful and making a difference for people and the planet. Whether it's a nonprofit's mission and purpose, a company that has a business model that includes a keen eye on corporate social responsibility, I'm always curious. And I want to share with others so they can grow in their knowledge and identify opportunities for change. You never know who we're going to have on to talk about how they and their organizations are taking care in business. And today we're going to talk about a topic that has been, gosh, just really talked about so much post George Floyd: diversity, equity, and inclusion. And today, super excited because we're going to talk about it under the guise of higher education, which I think there's a lot of things that come to my mind when I'm thinking about diversity, equity, inclusion in higher education. And so I'm super excited because we have Nick Davis here with us today, and he is the Director of Diversity and Inclusion at Rose Holman Institute of Technology, which is a prestigious engineering school that happens to be in my state of Indiana. So hi, Nick.
Hi. Hi, Vicki. Hi, everybody. Super happy to be on the podcast today. Obviously, diversity, equity, and inclusion in higher education is a huge passion for me, so I'm really excited to dive in.
Yeah, and I just, full disclosure, I was sleuthing you, prepping for this interview, and I see that you're moving on to Dartmouth.
Yes, that it's been kind of a wild couple months, but you know, Rose Holman, an incredible institution, and they've really prepared me for getting to the next level of my professional journey. And so, yeah, transitioning to Dartmouth here in a couple weeks, making that move to the East Coast. Trying to find, you know, new places to explore, but very happy for that opportunity. Going to be joining the campus services division at Dartmouth as their director for culture and employee belonging. So really hyped up, super excited to be working with faculty and staff over at Dartmouth.
Yeah, and that's a shift, you know, to go from DEI to culture and well-being. Is that what you said? Culture and
employee belonging.
Which are all the tenets of corporate social responsibility.
Right.
So you really got me listening. I want to start with a general question because I find it so interesting, just your path that you're following here with your career. Corporate social responsibility must really ring a bell with you as well. What is corporate social responsibility to you, and how did you get interested in this?
Yeah. So, you know, definitely a non-traditional approach to the diversity, equity, and inclusion world. Right out of undergrad, started in healthcare, mental health, working at a number of organizations. One of those was Carolina's healthcare system, which is one of the largest healthcare systems in the Carolinas. Worked there for a few years, but really started to see in my day-to-day opportunities to grow from a diversity, equity, and inclusion lens. And corporate social responsibility, you know, is a key tenet there. And I found that in some ways, as I was going through and then moved to Indiana and was a state employee with the Department of Child Services, there seemed to be at times a disconnect from what the policy was at an administrative level and what was actually happening on the ground. And it really opened up my eyes to that uniformity in having policies, practices, and procedures that uphold diversity, equity, and inclusion principles, and then how those are actually played out in the day-to-day can sometimes be very different. And so that really, for lack of a better term, sparked my obsession with diversity, equity, and inclusion. And so when I transitioned into higher education, it was like a whole new world, right? How do we take these policies, practices, and procedures at the systemic level, identify the barriers that exist, and then how does that play out in your day-to-day activities and communication? So a very varied past, but definitely I'm excited for this next chapter, and really talking about how we put those initiatives into practice.
Yeah, that's a good segue to something that I really have been thinking and prepping for this interview. So you got diversity, equity, and inclusion, and it being something that matters to universities, in this case, Rose Holman. What I'm really curious about is like, at what level what lens are you viewing that through? Is it from recruitment of students, or is it their well-being while on campus, or is it a combination of both?
Yeah, that's a great question. I think if we're looking at broader systemic diversity, equity, and inclusion initiatives, it does have to be kind of this multimodal thinking about everything playing into those institutional policies, right? So it is a little bit of everything. You know, it's student recruitment, recruiting students to attend our schools. It's our talent acquisition with employees, right? How are we attracting talent? Mm-hmm. How are we engaging talent, knowing that we have the most diverse generational populations in the workforce today? So what are those engagement strategies that may be different depending on the generation of worker you are? And then how do we retain that talent? But it's so much broader than that. It's even the policies and procedures that we've built up as institutions, right? Something that I think is so interesting is, in my work, I really started to value equity audits. And, you know, this is kind of a common practice in the UK and Australia, which I think are kind of at the cutting edge of diversity, equity, and inclusion work in a corporate setting. But, you know, taking a policy and dissecting it, essentially, are there equity gaps in policies, right? Because we know policies are created to benefit a majority population, and sometimes they inadvertently marginalize underrepresented populations. And sometimes that's intentional, sometimes that's not. I think for the most part, it's not intentional. But do we even look to see, okay, well, who is this policy affecting? So it's been a really broad range and a broad scope of, you know, how we're providing a service to our institution and our stakeholders, both internal and external.
Wow. Yeah, that's such an interesting answer. And it just makes me go in a million directions. But let me just start with the most basic question. How do you do an equity audit? It sounds so, you know, like it would be simple, but there is no way that is simple.
Yeah, you know, standardizing a practice or streamlining it can always be an interesting challenge or opportunity. You know, looking at the research, you know, specifically out of UK, a lot of their equity audits actually applied to civil engineering and construction work. And so they were taking a look at policies or procedures that benefit the corporation or the practice, but can sometimes lead to, you know, unsafe environments for employees, mm-hmm. Create unproductive work schedules, marginalize employees from underrepresented backgrounds. And so they basically created a rubric and scaffolded a rubric around like policy reform, right? And so I take a look at, we have a policy here, we outline where it even came from, right? How many times in a corporate setting do we have a policy that we don't really know where it came from, but we've always been using it? And so taking a look at the genesis of that policy and then breaking down, okay, who are the stakeholders here? Who is being impacted by this policy? And sometimes what we found, even even in a general sense, right? A policy uses binary language. It's not inclusive. A policy creates a work schedule that's not conducive to a variety of different employees. And so once we start to pick these apart and look at, you know, could we be creating policies, practices, and procedures that marginalize and actually restrict the retention of employees, then we have something. And then we can say, okay, well, what's our game plan for addressing this? And, you know, in the UK especially, there's always like a diversity liaison that is kind of a checks and balances throughout the process of either revising or creating a new policy. It's really exciting, but it's a labor of love, I would say.
Well, and the, you know, having good DEI practices, policies, and procedures obviously contributes to the culture and, you know, what is your other part of your new title? Well, belonging.
Employee belonging. Employee belonging. Yes.
It contributes to that, correct? So what I'm wondering is there a DEI person at Dartmouth and you're going to be working alongside them? Or is this title, does it encompass work with DEI at Dartmouth and that you're still going to be doing that part of what you did at Rose Holman, but at Dartmouth under a new title?
Yeah, you know, when I looked at the job description for the Director of Culture and Employee Belonging at Dartmouth, I was really struck with, one, the transparency that I saw, as well as the organizational structure at Dartmouth. So you have an institutional diversity, equity, and inclusion office, but they really utilize a hub and spokes model, as I like to say, right? Where you have your centralized diversity office, and then each division or college has their own diversity, equity, and inclusion area of focus. And so within campus services, I'm basically going to be a liaison between the institutional DEI office and campus services. But this position is pretty unique, and I'm very proud that it came out of a lot of strategic planning work. Campus services hired an external consultant in DEI to take a look at, are there opportunities, are there barriers at play systemically that we need to start breaking down and managing? And this position came out of listening sessions, employee feedback, that strategic planning process. And so I'm super excited to be a part of like an inaugural position where you get to leverage all of this expertise in a way that is going to promote broader education and knowledge, better senses of belonging and engagement, more transparency within the campus services division. And that's really exciting. And that's something that I want to be a part of. So it'll be a little similar to Rose Holman, definitely taking everything that I learned from there, but really starting to explore that sense of belonging at Dartmouth.
Did Dartmouth's strategic planning come out of the just after post George Floyd and just the importance of everybody starting to listen and learn, or were they encroached in that before the George Floyd situation?
Yeah, so I'm not on campus yet. I've done as much research as I could. But one thing that really struck me with Dartmouth is, you know, a lot of times, and we're kind of seeing this in the corporate world, we're moving away from diversity as a buzzword, and moving more towards a term like diversity where it's a way we do business, right? And that's why you're seeing adding, instead of just having diversity, we're seeing equity, we're seeing inclusion, belonging, justice. And so many times initiatives, whether it's higher education or in the corporate world, can largely be seen as performative or being reactionary, right? We saw a lot of that with George Floyd, and those initiatives that have stuck around kind of let us know, okay, you have integrated it into your business practice. But something that's really exciting about Dartmouth is they've had an institutional DEI office for some time. They've had this hub and spokes model for some time. And so I really kind of see it as this is just the next iteration of our progress as an institution, not so much responding to, but further strengthening initiatives that we already have in place, which I think that's great. And I'm very excited to be a part of that, right?
Yeah, no, that's good to hear. I mean, I think that, you know, a lot of people are looking at it like, how can we formalize what maybe we weren't, there weren't policies or weren't, you know, I don't know, procedures. It wasn't part of our mission and vision, you know, but now they're, I think companies, small companies, big companies, they're feeling like they do need to institutionalize all of that more so that they are transparent. And so I think that, and it's going to vary, right, from industry to industry. But I figured in higher ed that had to be a part of any operational plan, strategic plan, particularly because, as I've seen from the time I was in college until now, my kids are, you know, one's done with college, one's in college, and one's going to college. You know, you see that just diversity across campuses, and that